This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
October baseball has arrived. Greetings and welcome back to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. We're up to episode 5 now at theyak.com/Austin. I'm Dustin McComas, long time Texas baseball writer at orangebloods.com, associate scout, part-time scout, just a huge, gigantic baseball nerd. And for baseball nerds, October, it doesn't really get any better than this. You've got college baseball programs beginning their official off seasons, which include a lot of scrimmages and some exhibition games. You've got Major League Baseball just beginning its playoff process, and it's already been something else. We've already seen the Rockies and the Cubs play the longest winner-take-all game ever in baseball history, which included all sorts of wacky stuff, and the playoffs are ongoing right now. The divisional series just started with the Brewers and the Rockies, so I'm excited. You can probably hear it in my voice. Usually I write down not a bunch of notes, but I like to make some bullet points about what I'm going to talk about over the course of a podcast. And I was like, screw it. I don't need any bullet points. I don't lack content right now. It's an exciting time for Texas baseball fans, and it's an exciting time for baseball fans in general. And, you know, since this is a Texas-centric Austin, Texas, University of Texas-centric podcast at theyak.com/Austin. We'll start with the Longhorns, who are practicing their offseason. It's ongoing. They're scrimmaging. Guys are on the mound throwing. Guys are in the box hitting. A lot of this time right now for the Longhorns is all about scrimmaging, all about competition, all about guys getting on the mound, showing coaches what they have, all about guys getting the batter's box. You know, these recruiting coordinators and assistant coaches do a lot of work in recruiting these freshmen, but they don't truly know what those guys are going to look like until they show up. So they're here, they're playing now, they're getting those coaches getting their first glimpse at those freshmen, and we'll talk about a few of those guys. I actually saw a couple of those guys throw after David Pierce's first media session, throw and play. I saw a little bit of a scrimmage after David Pierce's first media session to preview the upcoming offseason. And we'll start with David Pierce coming off of a Omaha trip, his first Omaha trip as a head coach, the program's first Omaha trip since 2014. And he really likes the mentality those returning guys brought back to Texas following the Omaha trip. And this roster is kind of similar to last year's roster in that it's kind of split between newcomers and returning players. A lot of freshmen a part of that recruiting class. I think every single scholarship commitment was a high school player. So a lot of freshmen arrived. A lot of freshmen are going to be in the mix too. There's some really, really talented freshmen, but Pierce was very high on the mentality of the returning players. You know, he said, quote, "These guys came back ready to work, ready to get better. What I've really been impressed with is our returning players have been great leaders and ambassadors of the program and realize they can get better. There was very little arrogance in their return. They had a great taste of Omaha. They have the right mentality right now." And for those who think, oh, it's just coach speak, well, yeah, there's that element to it. I mean, every coach is going to be excited right now, especially coaches that just came off of an Omaha trip and signed the recruiting class that David Pierce signed. I mean, D1 Baseball just came out with their recruiting class rankings for the freshman class or the recruiting class on campus now, and Texas came in at number 9, tops in the Big 12. So consensus across the board was that Texas had a top 10 recruiting class. So yeah, David Pierce is right to have a smile right now. But I always keep going back to the way he described his team in those preseason media sessions before the season began, I believe in late January or February. And he was very, very, very high on the team's chemistry. And I kind of dismissed it partially as coach speak, but I filed it away in the back of my head as something to follow because he was genuinely very complimentary about the chemistry. And right now he's very, very complimentary about the mentality that the Longhorns have. And he really likes how the returning players return from Omaha, ready to work, ready to get better. And he likes how the young guys have jumped into the mix as well. Very much a, we're going to compete. We're going to listen, but we're not going to be afraid to compete for a job. And there's going to be some jobs up for grabs. And I asked David Pierce about just the competition aspect of this offseason. And that's always an aspect of every offseason, but I feel like he's going to be paying even closer attention to this because there are some jobs up for grabs. You got to replace Cody Clemens, Nolan Kingham, and Chase Sugart threw a lot of innings at Texas. They're gone. Parker Joe Robinson is gone. Andy McGuire in the back end, Josh Sawyer. Those guys have moved on. So there's a lot of jobs up for grabs. Jake McKenzie is no longer at first base. There's going to be some competition. And he specifically brought up Mason Hibler because the senior who was recruited as a middle infielder, he played shortstop in junior college, came at Texas, and they thought he might actually push David Hamilton a little bit. Well, David Hamilton turned out to be just a wizard with the glove and wasn't going to get pushed off shortstop and actually hit a lot better as a sophomore than he did as a freshman. So Hibler seems to be the odds-on favorite maybe right now to play second. But as Pierce mentioned, he can play all over the place. And that's such a luxury to have when you have these competition at different spots, because as guys emerge and find their homes at different spots, you can move a Hibler to the outfield if you need to. He was really good defensively in left field last year. You could potentially move him to third base. You know, right now, Ryan Reynolds is sitting out in the fall, as he recovers from a back. He had a back issue. David Pierce is recovering well. He, along with Austin Todd, sounds like they'll be out the entire fall. So those are two guys that were thought to be regulars last year. Reynolds often was. Todd was just never healthy. If he's healthy, I think he's in a lineup. That's just been a big issue for him. So maybe Hibler takes third base and runs with it. Maybe he just ends up at second base like people think because Cody Clemens is no longer here. He could also play first base too. And Zach Zubia is getting better, as David Pierce said, at first base. But I sense that Pierce is still very reluctant to put him there. And is kind of hoping that somebody jumps up and grabs that position. Even Tate Shaw has been working there some. Pierce really likes to, in the fall, what he calls getting those guys looks at secondary positions. And maybe you figure out that a guy can really thrive at a secondary position. I think that's what kind of happened with Hibler last year. I mean, if you would have told Texas early on, hey, he's going to play something else other than infield, they probably would have looked at you a little weird. But I would contend that he was better defensively in left field than he was at any other position in the infield. So, you know, this is a time when there's a lot of competition ongoing and you can try guys in different spots and see how they respond. And oh, by the way, there's some freshmen on campus that could potentially push for immediate at bats as well, including at second base. Lance Ford, who I got a brief look at, and I think that he's a guy that's turning some heads right now with the way he's swinging the bat. Bryce Regan was a big-time recruit coming from IMG Academy, switch-hitting infielder, really athletic. I think that his glove is ahead of his bat right now, but he's got some tools. And, you know, and the glove to me, especially for a guy that can play middle infield, is the toughest spot. Oftentimes you get guys on campus where the bat's ahead of the glove in the middle infield. And so Reagan is a guy that could play second base, obviously Hibler. So they've got some options there. And this is an opportunity for Pierce to, you know, throw some guys out there, see what happens, and let guys play their way into at bats to open next season. I mean, these guys scrimmage a lot. You know, it's the off season is basically, you know, it's not much drill work really. I mean, you did all your drill work early on in the voluntary or whatever they're called, group sessions, before the true off season began. So I would say that there's probably a teaching session earlier in practice, and then they scrimmage for, you know, 5, 6, 7 innings or something like that. And so they get a lot of innings and a lot of at bats. They get to see guys in a lot of different scenarios. It's a great opportunity to see kind of who's going to sink or who's going to swim, especially for those new guys. And also, too, are those older guys improving? You know, David Hamilton, the first at bat I saw him after we spoke to David Pierce,
Hamilton steps in the box and lines one, you know, lines 94 miles an hour out to left field. And, you know, Zach Zubia, who's coming off, I think, is a pretty solid summer at the Cape Cod League. He's hitting the ball hard. DJ Petrinsky looks like a more mature hitter. So it's an opportunity for those older guys to take a next step. And you see it with hitters. It's a lot of comfort. It's a lot of more physical maturity. It's a lot of, you know, they've had time to learn about their swings at this level. And Sean Allen is great with the Texas hitters about, you know, tweaking their swings and their swings path and things like that. And you see it on the mound too. And, you know, from what I heard, Bryce Elder was really, really good yesterday in a small start. I think he threw two or three innings. Fastball, cutter, a cutter that sometimes looks like a slider with different depth and different shape a little bit. Changeup and also a curveball. And, you know, sinking fastball and just pounding the zone with command of all those pitches. I know I've talked a lot on the Extra Bases podcast about Cameron Fields and how much I really like him. Elder, I might need to give Elder some more credit as a potential breakout guy, one of those returning guys. And, you know, maybe Nico O'Donnell falls into that group a little bit as well. But you just look at all the returning guys, and it's an opportunity for them to improve as well. And you know, they're going to get pushed. They're going to get pushed by some of these freshmen. You know, Lance Fords, Chase Roberts, Peter Gabe. Those are all hitters, I think, that have caught the attention of some people so far that are freshmen. We mentioned Reagan in just the athleticism and the glove. On the mound, really, I think, is where Texas fans will notice the most youth, but in a positive way. There's some guys in big-time stuff. And Ty Madden, who threw after David Pierce spoke, the first pitch I saw Ty Madden throw was 95 miles an hour. is a true freshman. And to be fair, he would have been drafted probably the top three rounds had he been signable. The Royals took a late flyer on him in the hopes that they would be able to circle the wagons with some leftover money if they didn't sign guys and throw a massive bonus at him. And they almost did had they not signed a junior college pitcher from San Jacinto that they drafted. I think they ended up paying him between $700,000 and $800,000 for a signing bonus, or else they probably would have taken that and trying to throw at Madden. So Ty Madden, Coy Cobb, Owen Meany, Jack Neely, Colby Kubicek, Mason Bryant. I mean, the name goes on. I think that Cobb and Madden are probably the two most likely to push for rotation spots, but they're going to get a lot of innings from this freshman class, and they need to. As it still amazes me, Texas got that pitching staff at the College World Series last season, because there wasn't a lot of great stuff in that staff. Even with Kingham, his stuff was really not that great for a majority of the season. It picked up later in the season when it mattered most. But, you know, throughout Big 12, early on in Big 12 play and late non-conference play, he was getting hit pretty hard and harder than he should have been. His stuff didn't quite look like it should have. So they've definitely upgraded the stuff. And, you know, with freshman pitchers, and David Pierce mentioned this, you know, their job with those guys is they really need to expedite how they manage pitching at the collegiate level. And what he meant by that, I asked him for a follow-up, and he mentions that, hey, these guys are going to have to understand that you might make a really quality pitch that a good hitter hits at this level. Or you might bust the guy in with 94 miles an hour and he turns on it. Or, you know, if you don't execute a pitch perfectly, it's going to get hit at this level. And that's an adjustment period for these young guys. And how do they handle that? How do they handle, you know, you're in the high school level, and if you throw with with velocity and a good breaking ball, you're going to dominate guys if you throw just close to the strike zone. That's not the case anymore. Now you're at a level, especially in the Big 12, where you're
you know, there are a lot of pitchers like that throughout the conference. How do pitchers handle, you know, understanding that they need to execute pitches, that they don't need to just throw pitches, they need to execute pitches? And how do they handle executing pitches and still sometimes not getting the results? So that's something that David Pearson and those guys can see firsthand, how those players handle all of that adjustment period in the fall. And really, that's a great those exhibition games that Texas is going to play is a great opportunity to see those freshmen, especially on the mound, handle that environment. Texas is going to play McLennan and also San Jacinto, two of the best JUCO community college programs in Texas, probably even the nation too. I mean, these programs often have guys that are drafted in the Major League Draft every single year, including pretty high in the Major League Draft. And also, you know, obviously programs like Texas recruit from those programs all the time and bring those guys into the mix of the D1 level. So it doesn't count towards the player's eligibility. So it's a great opportunity to play a ton of innings and throw guys out there and just see how they handle not pitching to a teammate in a scrimmage. Because it's one thing to do that, to have an inner squad when nobody's watching. It's another thing to actually face competition in an exhibition game setting where there will be a few people watching. And then, of course, the next step up from that is the actual season and how they all handle that. So I think that it's a great thing for these college programs that they get to play those games in the fall, and it doesn't affect the eligibility status of those players. So like Pierce mentions, like, hey, we might go through the offseason and realize that we'd like to sit this guy out and redshirt him for a year. You know, it's easier to have a better feel for who needs to play and who's able to play and who's not when you are able to see, you know, play a bunch of innings against a McLennan and a San Jacinto before playing the Fall World Series at the end of the season. So, again, this is the Extra Bases Podcast, Episode 5. You're listening to Dustin McComas on the yak.com/Austin. Had a brief one-week hiatus. I squeezed in a family vacation with my wife and her side of the family, my sister-in-law, my brother-in-law, and my parents-in-law. Is that how you say it? Or just call them in-laws? I'm still quite not used to that yet, even though I've been married for a little over 2 years. So went up to the New England area, landed in Boston, drove to Salem, Massachusetts, then drove to Kennebunkport, Maine, and then over to Manchester, Vermont, and then back down to Austin, and actually saw a Red Sox Yankees in Fenway Park on Friday, which was awesome. We had seats. Basically, if you looked at the left fielder and then went directly horizontal to his right, that's where we were sitting, just probably about 15 feet from that wall there. And as you know, if you've seen Fenway Park, there's not a lot of foul territory than a left field line. That Friday night game when Steve Pierce hit that grand slam homer over the Green Monster, it was, you know, basically in our area. So Red Sox fan, that wasn't the result I wanted, but the results that matter are the games that are about to take place in Fenway Park this beginning this Friday between the Red Sox and Yankees in the American League Divisional Series. So we'll get to some Major League Baseball playoff discussion here in a moment, but just wrapping up the Texas baseball discussion, now that they've actually had a few scrimmages, I think that you can pencil in DJ Petrinsky and Michael McCann into that catcher spot. Petrinsky's going to start. I'd be shocked if he doesn't start. But McCann is going to play, and that's a great luxury to have when you have two catchers that are reliable options, and you're not catching a guy for 60 games, and then you get to the postseason, and you know he doesn't have the legs he needs to have in order to have success. And both of those guys, Pierce mentioned, can play first base. In our options there, although I think that Texas would be better suited finding an option, whether it's Zubia, maybe a Reynolds moves from one corner to the other, Hibbler, they've got Tate Shaw over there fielding some. I think that they'd be better off with that option as opposed to a backup catcher. And just if Zubia is not going to be their first baseman, he needs to be their everyday DH, because they're going to need to replace some of that pop that's going to be missing from Cody Clemens' departure. And second base is obviously wide open. You mentioned that earlier about Hibbler, Ford, Reagan. I think that those are the main options there. I'd be surprised if it's not one of those three guys that's the guy. And if it's not Hibbler, that's a great luxury for Texas because they can play him all over the place. Reynolds being out right now in the fall kind of makes third base up for grabs, and he didn't exactly hit very well last season. He saw defensively when the balls hit at him, but he lacks some range over there. So that could be a position that's a competition. In fact, I think it will be. The outfield is jammed. Duke Ellis is going to be somewhere. And you know, he's a guy I was talking to a longtime scout the other day that saw him in the Cape Cod League and is around Texas some. He's like, he's a guy that he gets a little bit better every single day. And I think that's true. Every time I see Duke Ellis, he's a little bit of a better baseball player in some way. And he's so competitive and he's so scrappy. And you watch the swing sometimes and it doesn't quite make sense how he's able to hit as well as he does, but he puts the ball in play and he makes things happen. And he's aggressive on the bases and his defense got positive reviews in the Cape Cod League. And I think that's something that is going to improve this year, potentially makes him an option in center field. Although I think he'd be a terrific corner outfielder defensively, but he's going to be in the outfield somewhere. If Austin Todd is healthy, and that's seemingly a big if, I'm not too worried about the shoulder. You know, he hurt his shoulder late last season, had an operation on that, and he's out for the fall. But that thumb, David Pierce mentioned the thumb still being an issue. And that, to me, is just it's lingering, and it's not going away. And sometimes it affects his swing, which is a real bummer because the kid is a player. He's got tools. I think that he would be one of the best hitters in the Big 12 if he was healthy. But he basically lost an entire season because of that thumb. And now he's not getting at bats in the fall. If he's fully healthy, he's tough to keep out of the lineup. He can play defense. He can throw. He can hit. He's got some pop. He can run a little bit too. But then you got Tate Shaw, who played a lot of outfield last year. You got Hibbler who could potentially play in the outfield. And then you got some freshmen like Chase Roberts, who we've mentioned before. And also Eric Kennedy, the little brother of Ben and Nick Kennedy, two former Longhorns. And wait till you see the little brother. He looks just like them. It's like you took their faces and combined it, and then there's this guy. And man, he can run. He can really, really, really run. And he's strong, which isn't a surprise because his dad has a background as a strength and conditioning coach. I believe he's still the strength coach for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So, yeah, when you have that kind of background for a father, you're going to be strong. So he's strong. He can really run. He puts the bat on the ball at a pretty good rate. You know, who knows? He could work himself into the mix as well. So the outfield is a bit of a log jam. There's Alec Carr could be a guy that maybe profiles in some corner outfield spots because I'm not sure if his glove is quite ready for third base at this level. Maybe it will be in time, but that's a hot corner in college baseball, and you got to have somebody that's average or better over there, especially with how much teams will try to bunt down there and stuff like that. But he had a bunch of pop in high school. I mean, he led Houston or the state of Texas when he was a junior in home runs, and then didn't play, I think, at all because of an injury last year. So he's probably still shaking some rust off and things like that. Maybe he's a corner outfield spot, but there'll be competition galore all over the place. And I think Texas fans should be excited about that. I think they should be excited about these freshmen from the little bit that I've seen so far. I mean, some of these dudes are for real. And you don't, as I've often said, you don't really know until the games start how those guys are going to perform in those moments. But specifically on the mound, there's going to be some guys that play big roles that are freshmen. The stuff is too good, and the stuff plays, and that's when you have, you know, that's what makes teams like Florida and Arkansas and Oregon State and these programs that have been consistently good for years now, Vanderbilt, although they haven't maximized anywhere close to the talent that they have. They just roll out these guys out of the bullpen. You're like, man, this dude's throwing 94 with a good breaking ball. Oh, they got another guy that's throwing 92 with life, and he's commanding it with a good changeup. Oh, they got this other guy doing this. And finally, although a lot of those guys are young, Texas has some guys with some stuff. And I think that's going to translate. I think that's going to be something that Texas fans notice in the Fall World Series, which, by the way, Texas announced November 1st, 2nd, and 4th for the Fall World Series. And I don't have my notes handy in front of me, but two of those games are for sure televised on LHN with times. And I think one of the times was to be determined based on how some things play out. So Fall World Series, November 1st, 2nd, and 4th. And that'll wrap up Texas's offseason. And that'll wrap up our discussion right now about the Longhorns. And we'll shift gears, get to Major League Baseball, the playoffs. The playoffs are here. There's nothing quite like October baseball. Grab a sip of water here real fast. I'm so excited about it that I'm got myself like parched. I think that's the right word. I feel like I'm in the desert right now. But October baseball is here, and it's wide open. You've got in the American League, you look at these rosters, and these are four juggernaut-type rosters. These are four really good teams. The wild card team almost won 100 games. Both of them, both teams competing in the wild card almost won 100 games this year. And you look at Cleveland, who has the fewest amount of wins of all the teams remaining, but Jose Ramirez, Francisco Lindor, Corey Kluber, Carlos Carrasco, they get Trevor Bauer back. That's a good roster. And I'll start there. I'm sure we have a bunch of Astros fans listening. The Astros, to me, are the most complete and best team in the playoffs right now. The way they finished the season, it's funny. The conversation about the Astros a few months ago was like, there's just something a little off about them. Maybe it's injury related. They just weren't healthy. They were banged up or this bad luck or this or that. But sometimes you see these teams that win World Series and they just don't quite have the same mental approach and production as they did the year prior when they won the World Series, because it's just different when you come off of a World Series. And when you come off of that grind of a series and that emotional deal and, everybody's talking about you're the champion now and stuff like that. It's just natural to have a little bit of to maybe struggle to regain that sort of competitiveness and mental fortitude again. But when you got guys like Alex Bregman and you add in a Garrett Cole who hasn't won a World Series, and you've got guys like Justin Verlander and Jose Altuve, Josh Reddick, a real high quality veteran, Brian McCann, another one of those quality veteran guys that's played a lot of postseason baseball. When you have that sort of mix with some young players and a lot of talent, it can kind of eliminate that. And I think the Astros, of any team that's won the World Series recently, are in the best shape to repeat. And we don't see repeat very often. When's the last time? I think it was the Yankees won three in a row in 98, 99, 2000. I know there was a back-to-back in there. It might have been three in a row, but that's the last time it's happened. And here the Astros are, the way they finished, they played great baseball down the stretch, they got healthier. They said they won more games this year than they did last year in the regular season. So here they are, and I think that they're poised to potentially run through the American League. They don't really have a weakness. As much as their bullpen was a discussion point throughout the year, their bullpen, if you look at like strikeout to walk and some of the advanced things and the peripherals and metrics or whatever you want to classify it as, it rates as one of the best bullpens we've seen in a long, long time, because they have a bunch of guys that can miss bats and strike guys out and get outs late in the game and not walk guys. Man, as a Red Sox fan, I'd kill to have some of those arms in the back end for Boston, but they've got the bullpen arms. Obviously, they've got the starting pitching when you're rolling out, Justin Verlander, Garrett Cole, and those dudes. They've obviously got the lineup. I think that when I last looked at the numbers, they have demolished lefties. Righties, not quite the same clip, but hit them well. It's a lineup that I don't know. I know Correa hasn't really looked the same all year. I wonder if something physically is a little off with him because he just hasn't been hitting the ball as hard as he has in his career. But, I mean, he showed some signs of life to end the season. And then you look up and down that lineup, and there's a bunch of tough outs. There's some pop. There's some athleticism. There's some speed. There's not a true weakness in that lineup. And, oh, by the way, there's some versatility, too, if you want to go left, right, and things like that. So I think that the Astros are going to win that series against Cleveland. Cleveland will push them. I mean, whenever you've got Corey Kluber in a short series, you've got a definite chance to win that series. And I love Francisco Lindor. If you haven't really zeroed in on Francisco Lindor and watched the way he plays with such a passion, such a joy. He's similar to Javi Baez. He really is. I don't think that he's as demonstrative. Like, you don't notice, his energy as much. But that's the way he plays the game, and I love it. It's so much fun to watch. He's great with the glove. He's awesome in the batter's box. And he's one of those guys that seemingly like lives with those big moment situations, much like Bregman. I think those are two of the most enjoyable guys to watch in those situations when those high leverage moments in the batter's box or something defensively where those guys crave those moments. And Jose Ramirez is a lot like that too, who plays in the infield as well for the Indians. Another guy that I just love watching because it's everything looks so easy to him. It sometimes looks like he's not even really trying that much because the game just comes so easy to him. So the Indians, let's not fool anybody. I mean, they've got a shot. They're not the Indians of, I think, last year or the year prior, but they're close. To me, the one real wild card with them is what kind of bullpen are they going to get? I mean, Andrew Miller has been on and off the disabled list all year. They went out and got Brad Hand, which is a huge deal. Oliver Perez has been great against lefties, but Cody Allen has not been the same guy. He hasn't really been nearly as effective as he has been in the past. So what do they get out of that bullpen, and how do they manage that bullpen? They have a lot of quality depth in the rotation. You know, the luxury of having this five-game series is, you know, maybe you only have to go with three starters. Do they shift some of those guys into the bullpen and try to maximize some stuff there? So it's going to be a great series to watch, I think. But I think the Astros are going to win that thing. I think the Astros are the favorite in both the American League and overall. I think they have the best roster. I think they enter the postseason playing really, really well. And I know the saying goes, you know, momentum starts with the guy on the mound, which is true. Just from somebody that follows the Pirates very, very closely, when they played in those wild card games, they ran into Jake Arrieta when he was the best pitcher in the National League and Madison Bumgarner when he was the best pitcher in the National League, and they went on that ridiculous postseason run that we've never seen before. Yeah, the Pirates' momentum stopped when they ran into those guys. That's how it works. But the Astros have been there before. I really like their mix of chemistry and talent and versatility. And then you look at Yankees, Red Sox. I mean, what else needs to be said? It pains me to say this, but I think the Yankees are going to win that series, and it starts with the bullpen. I'm terrified of Boston's bullpen. Even Craig Kimbrell at times was shaky this season, but there's just not only does Boston not have a lot of options. The Yankees have a ton of options. I know they had some of those guys struggle, but the stuff was always there. It's just a matter of executing pitches. With Boston, it's, Matt Barnes, quality stuff. I mean, Joe Kelly throws 100, but guys hit it. There's just not, they're not rolling out Dylan Betances and David Robertson and Zach Britton and Aroldis Chapman. They're not. It's really, in terms of stuff and depth and talent, it's really not that close. And as we saw in with the Brewers, a good bullpen can be a weapon when you shorten games. We saw it with the Yankees against the A's. Severino went four innings. Betances was great. Britton got in there. Chapman got in there. Robertson was in there. And then, boom, they win. Of course, it helps when you're putting up seven runs, but Aaron Boone didn't have to blink in pulling Severino from the game early. Of course, Severino didn't get help from his infield, which to me is a huge X factor of this series. Is the Yankees can make some routine stuff look really difficult, especially if Miguel Andujar is in the lineup at third base, and especially if Gary Sanchez is catching. they can boot the ball around. They can make life more difficult on themselves defensively than it needs to be. So, and Boston's a lineup that I think is going to put the ball in play hard at a high level. So that could be the X factor to this series is that Yankee defense shaking some key moments to give a good Boston lineup some second chances to put some big road totals on the board. I like how Boston's lineup matches up against New York starting pitching. Boston's lineup to me was the best in baseball. It had a little bit of a stretch in September where it got away from what it was good at, which was being very aggressive early in counts against pitches they can drive. And they started to get back to that at the end of the season. But they've got right-handed presence. They've got left-handed presence. The addition of Steve Pierce was big, and you'll notice it when J.A. Happ pitches for the Yankees. When Pierce is in there hitting the middle of the lineup with that right-handed presence and playing first base, that's a quality presence. So they've got some right, they've got some left. The bench bats are not great, but they do have a little versatility there. And I like how that lineup matches up against New York starting pitching, but really to me is the bullpen kind of serves as a tiebreaker for the Yankees. And I just have this feeling that, well, not this feeling. I mean, I look at the numbers and watch these guys pitch. That Yankee bullpen to me is the difference in that series and could push them forward into the ALCS, against which I don't think the Astros they're waiting for them. So looking over at the National League, again, you're listening to the Extra Bases Podcast, Episode 5. I'm Dustin McComas. This is the Yak.com. We covered some Texas baseball early on. Now we're doing some MLB playoff discussion as the playoffs get going. In the National League, you've got Brewers, Rockies, and you've got Dodgers against the Baby Braves. The Baby Braves, I don't really know what to expect from them. You've got a lot of guys that have never really been in this position before. You've got a lot of young pitchers that have never thrown this many innings before. When that happens, it's tough to predict how it's all going to play out. So, unfortunately for the Braves, I think they're matched up with, in my opinion, the best roster in the National League. In the Dodgers, especially with what they can do offensively, and especially how Walker Buehler has really pumped some life into that pitching staff and given them a guy with just truly dominant stuff that can start games, gives them a lot of options on how to adjust with their bullpen, which has been an issue at times. So I like the Dodgers in that series, although I think the Baby Braves, sometimes you get these guys and they don't know they're not supposed to be there and they thrive. And if you've never seen Ronald Acuna Jr. play, man, is he a lot of fun. Tools galore. He's young. I think he's only 20. But man, can he play. And he can, I mean, drive the ball out of the yard like crazy. The ball just really jumps off his bat. He's one of those five-tool players. He's a special, special, special talent. And then Ozzy Albies, a second baseman, kind of an orthodox swing, and I think he's listed at 5'9", which might be generous, but little switching dynamo that can lift the ball out of the yard and plays the game with some flair and some energy. Another quality player, and of course, Freddie Freeman. And then you look at some of their arms, Tuki Toussaint, Kyle Wright, Sean Newcomb. Just bringing up top prospect after top prospect that's really helped bolster this pitching staff. My concern with the Braves would be, is beyond Mike Foltynewicz, who really took that next step this season. What does that starting pitching look like? I just wonder about that. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I think the Dodgers are going to take that series. And then Brewers, Rockies, I like the Brewers because the Brewers to me are best suited more so than anybody else in the National League to shorten games with that bullpen. And if they get a lead early, it's going to be tough to get it back from them. And the way Christian Yelich is swinging the bat, Lorenzo Cain is awesome. Lorenzo Cain is might be the most underrated player in Major League Baseball. He has an MVP candidate, and you really don't hear much about him. He's awesome defensively. He puts the ball in play all the time. He can run. He's been great. Yelich, obviously, Aguilar at first base. They went out and they got Jonathan Schoch from the Orioles, who played second and had some pop. They went out and got Mike Moustakas. They've got Travis Shaw. And you look at their bullpen with Hader and Knebel and Jeffries, and you know they've got more options beyond that. I worry about their starting pitching because they don't really have that true type of lockdown guy with lockdown stuff. But all they need from these guys is just five quality innings. Heck, maybe even just four. And just hand it to somebody in the bullpen. And the way that lineup performs, I think it's going to take the series against Colorado, which is funny that Colorado has kind of been carried into the postseason by its starting pitching. Who would have thought that? Their offense, statistically, has actually been one of the worst Colorado offenses in recent memory. They've got some big names, obviously, with Charlie Blackmon, Trevor Story, Nolan Arenado. I like when they have guys like David Dahl in the lineup, Ryan McMahon, young guys that are eventually going to be key pieces for them, but they keep playing guys like Ian Desmond because they paid Ian Desmond a lot of money, even though he's not that good. So they got some pieces in there, but just hasn't been a great offense this season. The bullpen has been a big concern, but it was arguably the story of the game when they went to Chicago and won that game to keep their postseason alive. Wade Davis was awesome. Awesome. I mean, throwing like 92-mile-an-hour cutters, 97-mile-an-hour fastballs. He was commanding his stuff. He looked great. They had O coming in and pitching out jams. Ottavino has obviously been their guy throughout the year, coming at you from that with that frisbee slider and then running 97 up there with life. And he was shaky at times, but he got out of his situation. So if they get that way, Davis, it might be a different series. But I still like the Brewers to come out of there and move on to the NLCS, probably against the Dodgers. But if you're unfamiliar with these teams, Lorenzo Cain, Christian Yelich, the Brewers, stars, MVP type guys, Josh Hader, Corey Knebel, Jerry Jeffers of the bullpen, mentioned some of the Rockies guys. Walker Buehler with the Dodgers is must watch anytime he plays. And then the Baby Braves guys like Albies, Acuna, Toussaint, Wright, Newcomb. They've got a lot of young talent that can really stand out. So I'm excited. I hope you're as excited as I am for October baseball. It's going to be fun. We're going to talk a lot about it. It looks like I've even talked over my limit, which is not that surprising when we're talking about playoff baseball and also the Longhorns getting their offseason underway as well. So until next time, I'm Dustin McComas. You're listening to the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com. Make sure to get over to theyak.com/Austin and check out all the Texas OU content we've got going on. Podcasts galore. High entertainment value. And we've also got my Dropping Dimes basketball podcast from earlier this week. I'm talking some Texas hoops and some college hoops as well. So, but until then, get out. Heck, drink some beer. Watch some baseball. And we'll see you next time on the Extra Bases Podcast at theyak.com.